Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to my today's podcast. My name is Mary, and I'm going to be hosting today's episode with the topic Black Voices, Slave Narratives, and the Voice of the Subaltern. I'm not only going to give you the definition and historical approach to the topic, I want to dive more into the question how the voice of the subaltern changed from then to now, and try to give an answer to the question if slave narratives can be considered an example of the subaltern voice. So, lean back, listen, and well, enjoy. First up, let's come to a general definition of what exactly is meant when it comes to the term of the subaltern or the voice of the subaltern. When you look up these terms, several definitions pop up. But in general, they stand for someone or a group of people who, in a larger community, have no voice or whose voices are being neglected, face discrimination, or being oppressed or subordinated according to their class, race, culture, religion, or other relationships of dominance. Examples would be minority groups in developed countries, so for example, the Roma and Sinti, people living in the Balkans, or indigenous people, lower class women that, due to their marginalization, have no voice, and that will be the subaltern that my podcast today will primarily be about, slaves resulting from colonialism and people of color. Although this podcast aims at just one group of the subaltern in specific, do never forget that there are several subaltern groups that still need to be heard and empowered. Let me quickly point out the current state of research, debates, and the relevance of this research in general. As Prakash and many other scholars point out, the establishment of the subaltern studies started in the 1970s, although the term subaltern was first used by the Italian communist intellectual Antonio Gramsci. While remaining ever aware of the relationships of dominance that produced subalternity, the scholars in the movement forcefully argued that subalterns moved as autonomous historical actors, possessing a history of their own, and that the historiographical primacy assigned to elites was illegitimate. The historiographical school arose first in South Asia, and back then, Stanton explains, they aimed to rectify the elitist bias characteristic of much research and academic work by focusing on the history of the subaltern. There are two significant questions being discussed in subaltern studies. The first one is if the subaltern can actually speak. And with his essay of the same title, Spivak questions the notion of the colonial and Western subject and provides an example of the limits of the ability of Western discourse, even post-colonial discourse, to interact with disparate cultures. In a kind of response, Jay Maggio states that the question should rather be, can the subaltern be heard? Because he suggests in his article that these limits Spivak talked about can partially be overcome and that all actions offer a communicative role and that one can understand cultures by translating the various contexts of their culture. But to the answer, if the subaltern have a voice and actually can speak, I will come later on. Discussing the relevance or irrelevance of subaltern studies, Baal states, while claiming to rewrite history from the perspective of subaltern groups as a prelude to creating a new emancipatory politics, it has deviated from its original intent and became mired in postmodernist debates about difference. The subalternist approach can be criticized on many other grounds as well, including its lack of a coherent theory of how subjectivity and agency are constructed within a concrete historical context, and its refusal to acknowledge how global capitalist forces are being worked out on the ground, including the generation of differences. Let's come to the historical approach. The circumstances that led to the subalternation of people of color within our society started way back, and this point is probably clear to all of us when colonialism started. People of color and people of African descent were soon turned into the oppressed, and their voices were basically taken away by their oppressors, which left them voiceless. Back in the 16 and 1700s, as a person of color in the United States, you did what was asked of you, and you took everything in that was thrown upon you. Soon, former slaves that were able to gain their freedom or even broke free from their masters started to write down their stories, and a new literary period was born, now called slave literature. I wouldn't say that this led to a huge difference in the predominant white society. Slavery was still a problem and most of the population of people of color was being oppressed, but for the first time, the subaltern heightened public awareness of the horrors of slavery, a possibility to tell their story, which was a first step towards something greater. And therefore, I would like to present to you one of the most important pieces of literature from that time, and that's the interesting narrative of the life of Olaudah Equiano, or Gustavo Vassa the African, which was written by himself, by Olaudah Equiano, in the year 1789. Let's come to a short summary of the narrative and a basic description of the voice of the subaltern in traditional slave narratives. The main protagonist of the narrative is the very religious Olaudah Equiano himself, and he's basically telling the reader the story of his life, starting way back in his hometown in today's Nigeria in West Africa, where he's being captured at the very young age of 10 and is being forced into slavery. He has quite a few masters growing up, working on ships most of the time, and in the end, he's even able to buy himself free, gaining the status of a free man and became a fighter for the prohibition of slave trade in reality. The narrative was published by himself due to the fact that self-publishing promised him more profit. He had no family wealth or other connections whatsoever, and he was cheated for money by white people before. The narrative was an important tool in the abolition campaign. It remains relevant today as a fascinating historical document and an inspiring story of success against the odds. These slave narratives were kind of the starting point for people of color to speak their minds, to be granted a voice. What is noticeable in Equiano's traditional slave narrative is that although he wrote his autobiography as a free man, the weight of his oppressors still lies on his shoulders. Time went on, and even though slavery was soon to be banished from the States, another problem hit soon after: segregation. Segregation into black and white in every situation of a normal daily life. In libraries, public bathrooms, buses, schools, unequal opportunities when it comes to the career, and so on and so forth. As a result of this ongoing inequality between black and white, the civil rights movement led by Martin Luther King Jr. occurred, which is said to be the most important breakthrough in equal rights legislation for African Americans since the Reconstruction period. With the changes in society came a transition in literature as well, and neo-slave narratives were established due to the civil rights and black power movement because the relevance and history of slavery came up again. Characteristic for neo-slave narratives is, of course, the fact that they are predominantly fictional. So traditional slave narratives were mostly written from someone's own experiences from slavery. And also, neo-slave narratives can be the tellings of the family history or the tellings of your friends or whatever. It is no rewriting of traditional slave narratives, but more likely something that is adding up to the history, and you can often find criticism on the traditional historical discography. In the new slave narrative that I will tell you about in a second, there is a clear lack of religion, which is a difference to the traditional slave narratives. I mean, think of the very religious Olaudah Equiano. Without further ado, I would like to approach the novel Flight to Canada by Ishmael Reed. The novel is about a young man named Quickskill who was able to escape from his master and tries to find his way out of slavery through his talent of writing. The thought he has in mind is going to Canada because it is being said to be the heaven on earth. He writes a poem, Flight to Canada, and can publish it soon after. And with a few struggles and meeting other protagonists on his way, he is in the end able to go to Canada, but sadly, it is not like a dream. More likely, it is like a second America, which he actually just escaped. The genre of this particular narrative is called a metafiction due to the circumstances that it plays in modern times. There are cars, airplanes, TVs, but slavery still exists, which was really confusing in the beginning for me to read. He's able to connect the 1760s with the 1960s due to the deadly attacks on two American presidents, which more or less in Abraham Lincoln's case, but that's another topic, fought against slavery and segregation. And Reed has this very ironic and almost funny way of writing about the Civil War, which is his way to formulate his criticism. In comparison to Olaudah Equiano's novel, you can see a clear development of the voice of the subaltern. You can genuinely feel Reed's criticism. He speaks his truth and does not hold back. He sets an example with his works and found his own way to talk about inequalities and such. Let's jump from the 1960s into the early 2000s, where Barack Obama was elected the first black president in the White House and made a change. And as Claiborne Carson stated, that it seemed to reflect a transformation of American society with ramifications for the civil rights movement. And now to one last leap in time, to 2020 and the current happenings within our society. The concept of Black Lives Matter does not exist since yesterday, and it is also not a trend to follow. That people are treated differently due to their skin color is a fact, and a problem that needs to be extinct. The murder of George Floyd was the straw that kind of, as you would say it, broke the camel's back, and now it's our turn to change something. Over the time of my research, I thought a lot about one statement, and that is if oppressed minorities do actually have a voice in their own right, if they are dependent on a more dominant group to make it be heard. As Nguyen Zhang states it, the truly subaltern people do not have a voice due to the fact that they are oftentimes excluded from the society they live in, often do not have the ability to speak the majority language and rather speak a minority language. They live geographically isolated and have no chance to get in touch with the people in charge. He furthermore indicates that in order to be heard and known, the oppressed subaltern must adopt Western ways of knowing, of thought, reasoning, and language. So yes, in the past, slaves needed their oppressors to be heard. However, in my opinion, this does not apply for people of color anymore today. For centuries now, they fought for their voice, fought to be heard, and fought against being a subaltern group. In my opinion, they actually don't need a more dominant group to be heard anymore because they are heard. I hear them, and luckily many, many more do so as well. They became strong, and as you could see in the ongoing Black Lives Matter demonstrations, people from all over the world with different backgrounds, skin colors, and religions go to the streets to protest together in unity, to fight together for unity. And there's no one being more dominant. In my opinion, we are all human, and that is what the world still needs to see and realize. Concluding from all that information given, you could say that there has been a development in the voice of the subaltern for people of color, but this development took over 400 years, is still not at its peak, and definitely does not count for all people of the subaltern. I hope that through my little podcast, you got kind of an idea and further insight into this still very important matter. And yeah, I thank you for listening. Educate yourselves and have a lovely day. Bye-bye.